still blows my mind just how much sun Alberta gets. You know, that big round thing in the sky that's beating on you right now as you do the weeding, move cows, or sweating in the cab of your tractor because the aircon busted for the 100th time. I grew up out east, and I'm pretty darn jealous just how much sun this province gets. And even in the winter, when it's cold enough for your eyelids to freeze shut, the sun seems to always be shining. Today, we're going to talk about solar power and how producers in Alberta can utilize it best. There are other types of clean energy out there, and they're all worth talking about, like wind, geothermal, geoexchange. They're great. I mean them no disservice by not talking about them today. But if you look at costs and practicalities, solar really does come out on top for producers who want to reduce their carbon footprint and have some energy independence. Now, to explain how producers can use solar power to their advantage, we've brought in Kale Scarf.
I work for Gateway Research Organization. We're an applied research association based out of Westlock. So we do a lot of small plot research and that kind of thing. And then extension events, you know, information sessions and that kind of thing. We have been contracted by Alberta Agriculture to promote their energy programs to make sure that the information gets out there into the hands that can use it the best, that people know what's available for them as far as funding goes and as far as their energy efficient options go.
With the help of Scarf, who was working for Grow when we talked to her last, but now she's working for Ducks Unlimited, we're going to go through a step-by-step process of the decisions you need to make as a producer who wants to go with solar or who's at least entertaining the idea. But before we talk about this amazing technology, we need to talk about energy efficiency. That's right, you need to finish your supper before I move on to dessert. I'm Derek Leahy, and this is Rural Routes to Climate Solutions.
I first want to talk about energy efficiency. Because it really is, it's the simple places, that's where you start. This is laundry on a line. It dries the washing using the very latest technology, a combination of solar and wind power. You know, it's simple. You take it back to basics, and energy efficiency is one of those things. It's a small thing, the little changes you can make here or there that are going to make a big difference as far as your energy use. And maybe that's the first place that you need to be looking when you want to clean up your farm, clean up your energy.
All right, so I need you guys to do something for me right now, or maybe not now when you have a coffee break or when you're finally back in the house. I need you to Google FEAP, that's F-E-A-P. After that, click on the link that says Farm Energy and Agri-Processing Program. Once you land on the Ag Alberta webpage, scroll to the bottom where you see a bunch of fact sheets, and there you'll find all the different energy efficiency tools, tricks and technology that are available for you to use on your farm. If you're a beef producer or a veggie producer, you might be looking at this list and just thinking, great, energy efficiency has absolutely nothing to do with what I'm doing. Just because if you look at the list, it's mainly catered to pork, poultry, dairy, pretty much anybody who's got a big barn. But according to Scarf, even using energy-efficient light bulbs in your yard can make a big difference and save producers money in the long run.
If you aren't convinced yet about switching yard lights over to LEDs, and this is one because if you think like you're in a chicken barn and you've got lights all the way up and you're always dimming and brightening them, then you're going, yeah, obviously your lighting makes a big difference. But if I've just got a few yard lights, is it going to make a difference? And this case study is they replaced 11 metal halide yard lights to LEDs. And the cost of that, so these are running 14 hours a day, and their cost to replace everything was a little over $1,000 for 10. And then the amount of energy that they saved in a year is 13 megawatt hours per year is what they saved, which translated into about $1,500. So in less than a year, they'd already paid for themselves. Those lights had already paid for themselves. And that's with their growing forward to grant, the funding system they had, they got $365 back. And so all in all, they had paid for their lights in less than a quarter of a year. So while it seems like maybe it's a bit big, it really does pay for itself, and that's true for a lot of energy efficient upgrades.
Scarf also mentioned that LEDs are just killing it when compared to those old incandescent light bulbs we all grew up with. Now, granted, LEDs are more expensive, but when you compare lumens per watt, which is a unit of measurement to measure the amount of light you get from a watt, it's about 15 with incandescent as opposed to 100 with LEDs. LEDs also last a lot longer. A good LED light bulb will give you about 50,000 hours as opposed to 1,000 hours with incandescent. Farm energy efficiency is more than just light bulbs. There's also energy-free and low-energy livestock waterers or irrigation systems with variable frequency drives, greenhouse energy curtains, all of which you can get funding for about 50%. So that's 50% of the cost covered under FEAP, that Farm Energy and Agri-Processing Program I mentioned. You might also want to get your hands on some submeters. What a submeter does, you can install it in your shop or your house, and it'll let you know just how much energy that building is using. You can use submeters to figure out what the weak link is in your energy efficiency regime. And the great thing about submeters, you can get three of them 100% covered under FEAP. So before you sink between $15,000 and $30,000 into a solar system, look into energy efficiency fixes. They're usually cheaper anyways. And check out FEAP to see what you can get funded. Once you've done that, then and only then do I permit you to actually look into buying a solar system. Okay, I'm joking, you can do whatever you want. Which brings us to, well, on-farm solar. Take it away, Scarf.
So solar. I want to use solar energy, but I'm not sure where to plug it in. So where do you start? That's the first. You know, it's right there. It's your opportunity, but where are the first places? And I'm going to talk a little bit about that. It all starts with your modules, with your panels. What size do you need? There's a really great website. Natural Resource Canada has a database of the solar potential in like all of the towns in Canada. So you just go on there and there'll be an Excel spreadsheet that you can open up, Control F, type in your town, and it will tell you what your potential is. So in Red Deer, the PV potential is 1,265 kilowatt hours per kilowatt, and that's for a year. So if you take your yearly energy use, which the average energy use in a residence for just a home in Canada is 7,200 kilowatt hours per year. So your farm, you'll probably be using more than that. This is just an example. So you take your energy use, you divide it by your PV potential, and that will give you the size that you need. So for an average home in Red Deer, they'll need about 5.7 kilowatt system installed. So that's about where you're at. So you can do that just to find out your own size.
So step one in putting in a solar system is figuring out what exactly your electricity needs are. Step two is you're going to have to decide whether you want to stay on-grid or off-grid. On-grid keeps you connected to the electricity grid that most Albertans rely on. Going off-grid would be cutting that connection, which is appealing to some producers. You've probably heard people talk about energy independence, and going off-grid is exactly that. But if you want to receive funding under the on-farm solar photovoltaics program, which covers about 27 to 35% of eligible costs of a solar system, you're going to have to stay grid tied.
The requirements. So there are some requirements for doing this, for getting the funding on the program. Number one, grid tied. And there's a few reasons why they want you to be grid tied. And I know this bums a lot of people out because they want to go off the grid and they want to be like purely self-sufficient. This is what I'm telling people. Number one, if you want to go off grid and your production, like you're producing, it's really difficult to do. It's really expensive. There's a lot of requirements. Solar energy isn't constant. Obviously, you have cloudy days. You have nighttime. And so you need to have something. What's your backup power source going to be? And so if you're using a generator, that can become kind of costly. If you want to put in batteries are super expensive. They require more maintenance. They don't last as long as the rest of your system. So it's difficult to go off grid. But it's not impossible. I do know producers, farmers who are off-grid, so you can do it. So that's the second thing I say. If you're really sold on this, is something you really want to do, You can still get funding on the program. You're just required under the requirements to keep all the equipment for 3 years after you've bought it. So use the program, get solar, be grid tied for 3 years, and then if you really want, you can go off grid after that. So that's your loophole. That's how you can do that if that's something you're passionate about. And I think it's a really great idea anyway, because while you're under those 3 years grid tied, you'll be able to catch the things that you need to change to be off grid. Because you can't go off grid and live the exact same lifestyle as what you're doing now. You need to start thinking about when you use your energy, how much energy you use, where you can cut back. So those 3 years grid tied, that'll be a great opportunity for you to track your energy use. When are you using it? How much are you using it? What appliances are a huge draw? So that's a good opportunity for that. Number two, because you're grid tied, you need to be approved under Alberta's microgeneration legislation. This is another one that some people aren't so pleased about, because the legislation right now is not set up for you to sell large amounts back onto the grid.
Under microgeneration, or what the cool kids are calling microgen, you can only produce enough electricity to meet your own electricity needs, which might be disappointing for some producers. Maybe you have, you know, a nice big barn roof. You could put up a sizable solar array that would produce way more electricity than you'd ever need. But since you're going for those grants, you need to sign up for microgen, which means the utility is more or less just going to take off whatever power you produce from your power bill. This might be an opportunity, though, an opportunity to up your farm game and diversify your operation. If you really can produce more electricity through solar energy than you actually need, maybe that's an opportunity to finally invest in one of those big C-can reefer units, or set up a meat processing shop, or design a nice cool air-conditioned unit for storing your vegetables or dairy products. I know that it's more money, and I'm not trying to plunge anybody into further debt, but with solar energy, and it's the same thing with farming, you need to think long-term. And if the associated opportunities of putting in a solar system will benefit you in the long term, well, isn't that worth taking the chance?
The idea is that you set up a system that's sized for your annual use. And so sometimes you'll be overproducing, especially in the summertime, and sometimes you'll be underproducing. But throughout the course of the year, it should even out so that what you produced equaled the amount that you used. So the overproduction and the underproduction, it levels off. So if you want to build a big system, more than you ever need, and selling back onto the grid, the legislation just isn't set up for that. And also, the way that's made, you're not going to make a ton of money that way anyway. So that disappoints some people, but if your goal is clean energy, if your goal is to make your farm as clean as it can be, this is still perfect for that.
If you really want to, it is possible to build a solar system that completely exceeds your electricity needs and sell it back to the grid. Okay, this wouldn't be micro generation. This is something called distributed generation. But like Scarf said, you're probably not going to make a whole lot of money. You really need to be a big electricity generator like Capital Power to make some money in a case like this. But it still might be a better option for you. The impression I'm getting from talking to folks around the province is that most producers do tend to go with microgen, though.
So now you've got your modules, where are you going to put them? There's two options. Are you going to roof mount them, or are you going to ground mount them? There's pros and cons to both. Roof mounting is a little cheaper, so that's nice. And then you've already got the space there anyway. You're not taking any space out. The downsides of roof mounting is you can't control the tilt as much. So your optimal tilt would be latitude, or latitude plus 15 degrees. Throughout the whole year, that's what's best. So if you're putting it on your roof, you're kind of limited. Your tilt's going to be whatever the tilt of your roof is. Generally, the cost savings of mounting it outweighs the amount of energy that you lose from that little bit of tilt difference. So usually that's the route people go. Also orientation, maybe your roof isn't exactly facing south, maybe you're a little east, maybe you're a little west. Obviously south is the direction you want to go, but a little bit tilted one way or the other versus the cost of ground mounting, that's going to be up to you. You can discuss that with your contractor. Orientation, again, south facing is optimal. Anything will be funded all the way up to due west, due east, you know, because sometimes you're limited in what your choices are, but really do try to get that south facing. The other thing with roof mounting is you have to think about when is your roof going to need redone, because it becomes a lot more expensive to redo your roof when you have to take all your solar panels off of it. So if you're looking at redoing your roof in the next 5 years, do them all at once. Do it all at the same time to make sure that you're all in sync that way. Tilt angle, again, you want latitude. There are some that you can get where you can move them through different times of the year. You can tilt it to the optimal tilt. There are also tracking kinds where they'll follow the sun, which is really cool and exciting. But the downside to that is then you have moving parts that can malfunction, so you have to be prepared for maintenance. The ones you move yourself, that's fun too. That's pretty cool. But people get tired of moving them. It's kind of just what people say, and it becomes too much work. So yeah, it just depends how avid you are about watching your solar energy. But shading, it's critical to avoid shaded locations. And when your contractor comes out, they'll do an assessment, different places in the yard to see what kind of buildings might be in the way, what kind of trees might be in the way, because it makes a big difference. And then your distance from your electrical panel. If you have two choices, and these are really good, this one's close to the electrical panel, this one's far, always choose the one that's close. You're gonna save energy on, or save money on the wiring. So try and think about how far from your panel you're going.
Personally, I'm actually a bigger fan of rooftop solar over mounting solar panels out in a field somewhere. There's something about losing potential pasture land to a solar system that doesn't really quite sit right with me. Now, there are some photos out there of goats and lamb grazing around a solar system, so I guess it is possible, and maybe I'm just making a big deal out of this where it's not needed.
Next is your inverters. So solar energy is all coming out in direct current, whereas everything in our grid runs on alternating current. So it needs to be switched, converted over from DC to AC. So that's why you need an inverter. And there's two main kinds of inverters, micro inverters or string inverters. So a string inverter, after your whole array or a whole like string of them, you'll have one inverter. So they all feed into one inverter and they switch over once. Whereas a micro inverter, each panel has its own inverter right at the end. And again, so a micro inverter is good because each panel is kind of on its own. So if one panel's malfunctioning or one panel's kind of shaded, then it's just that panel that's affected. Whereas if you have the whole string and one of them's not really working or shaded, then the whole string is kind of drugged down by that. So that's why you might choose to go with a microinverter. The benefits of a string inverter is that there's only one of them. So that's only one place where it can malfunction. Whereas micro, you got lots of different places where it could go wrong. Also, it's a little cheaper to do a string inverter, just have one inverter, than to do the microinverters. So again, you just weigh out what your goals are with your solar to see what's going to work for you.
So to sum things up very quickly before we run out of time here, step number one in putting in a solar system for producers is just figuring out what your energy needs are. Step two, well, you need to decide if you want to go on or off grid. But like we said a little bit earlier, what we discussed a little bit earlier, you need to stay grid tied if you want to get those grants under the Unfarmed Solar Program. Moving on to step three. Step three is make sure you meet the criteria under micro generation legislation. Step four, figure out where on your farm you want to install those panels. And of course, you got to make sure those panels are south facing. Step five, figuring out what kind of inverters you want to use to convert that very wonderful DC direct current that the panels produce into AC alternating current that we all use for electricity. You may also want to consider the make of the panels, as well as the different mounting, or what they call in the industry racking options for your panels. But that's pretty much it. You're good to go for solar. Except we haven't really talked about that one major barrier people have when it comes to solar power, or really most forms of clean energy, just money. The darn things aren't cheap. Yes, there are grants out there to help you, but I had an interesting conversation with a farmer at the old Strathcona Farmers Market over the winter, and she was saying, yeah, the grants are great, but if you think of it, 27% or 35% off of solar system that costs between 15 and 30 grand, it still means you're paying between $10,000 and $20,000 for the solar system. For some producers, that's pretty much their entire annual farm income. So there is another financing option, and this one's open to all Albertans, and it's called PACE Alberta. What PACE stands for is Property Assessed clean energy. And it's like taking out a mortgage on a solar system. The beauty of PACE is there's no upfront cost for your solar system, none whatsoever. It's actually private investors who put up that cost. So what you do is you put in your solar system, you set it up, and you slowly pay it off through your property tax bill, and you could take up to about 30 years to do so. So if you think of it, the money that you're saving on electricity more or less goes to paying down your solar system.
And then your payback period. That's the other thing that everyone wants to know, is when am I going to start make my money back on this? And so number one is that's impossible to say, because the big benefit of solar is the money that you save on your electrical. And if I can't tell you what the price of electricity is going to be 15 years down the road, I can't tell you what your payback period is going to be. And no one can predict the future. So I don't know what the electricity prices are going to do. I can be pretty confident that they're not going to go down. So take that into account. Other things you want to consider when you're talking about, like, is solar going to pay for itself? Time of day. Can you use it when you produce it? And it's important whether you're grid tied or off grid. When are you using most electricity? If you're using most electricity in the nighttime during the winter, solar might not be for you, because you're producing all this energy and then not using it. The other thing is, if you are grid tied and you're selling onto the grid, you get paid for the cost of your electricity, the retail value of electricity. But you know that when you pay for your electricity, you're paying for the cost of electricity, and then you're also paying for the distribution and transmission costs. So that's two costs right there, whereas what you're getting paid is just the cost of electricity. So it's better to produce it and use it and save on some of that transmission distribution and save on the electricity than to transport it onto the grid.
Our on-farm solar episode with Kale Scarf. We used the audio from Scarf's presentation at the Organic Alberta Conference this past winter to create the episode, and for that, we're very, very grateful to Scarf for allowing us to do this. This podcast wouldn't be possible without financial support from the Alberta Real Estate Foundation, so big thank you to them. Also, big thank you to Duke Pats for all the coaching tips, and the Maker House in Red Deer for providing us with a studio as well as equipment. Rural Routes to Climate Solutions is a central Alberta-based project providing opportunities for rural Albertans to learn how to benefit from climate solutions. Along with this podcast, we also run workshops as well as farm field days. Check out our website for our next event. It's www.rr2cs.ca. You can also make a comment about the podcast on the website. Lastly, I'd like to thank the Steering Committee of Rural Routes to Climate Solutions, which is made up of Brenda Barrett, Dana Penrice, Mark Fox, and Kim Cordish. Get lots of great ideas and great support from them. Happy farming wherever you are in Alberta, and remember, what's good for the farm is usually good for the climate.